Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hari Nam Sankirtan ki.
Sri Sri Kishore Kishore ki.
Sri Sri Gornatha ki.
Sri Jagannath Baladev Lady Subhadra ki.
Gaura Premanandi,
Rajkanta Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
All glories to the assembled devotees,
glories to the assembled devotees,
glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga,
all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinda.
Continue from Madhya Lila chapter 6, the liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, text number 172, continuation of the discussion between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Lord Chaitanya is speaking.
Yasa bhante branta bali se sutta dosadiya vivarta vada stapiyache kalpana kariya.
Translation and purport. Sankaracharya's theory states that the absolute truth is transformed. But accepting this theory, the Mayavadi philosopher degenerates Srila Vyasadeva by accusing him of error. Thus they find fault in the Vedanta Sutra and interpret it to strive to try to establish the theory of illusion. Purport. The first verse of the Brahma Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. We must now inquire into the absolute truth. The second verse immediately answers Janma Yasya Yataha. The absolute truth is the original source of everything. Janmadi Yasya Yataha does not suggest that the original person has been transformed. Rather, it clearly indicates that he produces his cosmic manifestation through his interceivable energy. This is also clearly explained in Bhagavad Gita when Krishna says, Matat sarvam paparitante. From me everything emanates. This also is confirmed in Taittiriya Upanishads. Yato va imani bhutani jayante. The supreme absolute truth is that which from everything is born. It is stated in the Mundaka Upanishads, Yatorna nabi srinjate grinate cha. The Lord creates and destroys the cosmic manifestation, as a spider creates a web and draws it back within himself. All these sutras indicate the transformation of the Lord's energy. It is not that the Lord undergoes direct transformation, which is called parinamavada. However, being very anxious to protect Srila Vyasadeva from criticism, Sankaracharya became a pseudo-gentleman and put forward his theory of illusion, vivartavada. Sankaracharya concocted this meaning of parinamavada, and by word jugglery he endeavored very hard to establish parinamavada as vivartavada. A little philosophical here, for those of you who have that inclination. It's the criticism or the statement here is that if something comes from something, someone, and then that person diminishes in potency and power because of that emanation from that personality. It's just like, you know, if you have money and you spend it, and gradually it decreases. Or if you have energy and you work, the energy starts to dissipate. So the Mayavadis put forth the theory that the absolute truth, everything is coming from the absolute truth, but as he creates the different manifestations, he becomes less. In other words, he becomes weaker. It's like one time Prabhupada was using the example. One guru, he was giving his disciple the power. So he gave him the shakti. You know. And now he said, now I am nothing. You have everything. I am finished. Yeah, he's become exhausted of all his power. He gave it away. So this is what goes on in spiritual life as truth. But the idea is that whatever emanates from the absolute truth can be as powerful as the absolute truth, and the absolute truth still remains the supreme power. And there's no diminishing of qualities or attributes in any activity of the absolute truth. It's just like, if you can use another example, if a man paints a painting, does that mean he becomes less by painting the painting? No, actually, in one sense, he becomes more. So Krishna is creating everything right from his transcendental body, and he also becomes, greater by his creation, and the creation also manifests through his energy directly. So Mayavadi philosophers, they've concocted these word jugglers in order to make the absolute truth look like it doesn't exist. Jivera dehe atma buddhi se mitahaya jaga ye mitanahe nasvara matrahaya. The theory of illusion can be applied only when the living entity identifies himself with the body. As far as the cosmic manifestation is concerned, it cannot be called false, although it is certainly temporary. Purport. The living entity is the eternal servant of Krishna. Being part and parcel of the Lord, one is constitutionally pure, but due to their contact with material energy, one identifies themselves with either the gross or subtle material body. Such identification is certainly false and constitutes the genuine platform of theory of illusion. The living entity is eternal. He can never be subjected to the limits of time as the gross and subtle bodies. The cosmic manifestation is never false, but is subject to change by the influence of the time factor. For a living entity to accept this cosmic manifestation as the field for his sense enjoyment is certainly illusory. This material world is the manifestation of the material energy of the Lord. This is explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Bhumir apanalo vayu kamana buddhi evacha ahankara iti yame binakrit prakriti astada. So who knows that verse? Bhagavad Gita 7:4. Who knows that verse? If you know Sanskrit, Bhumir apanalo vayu kamana buddhi evacha. What is that? Yeah. These are the different elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. Ahankar, iti, ego, diyame bina, prakriti, astada. What does astada mean?
Eight.
So these eight elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, make up my material energy, Krishna says. Material world is the inferior energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but it is not a fact that the Supreme Lord has been transformed into this material world. The Mayavadi philosophers, devoid of true understanding, have confused the theory of illusion and the theory of the cosmic manifestation by word jugglery. The theory of illusion can be applied to a person who identifies himself with the body. The living entity is the superior energy of the Lord, and the material world is the inferior energy. But, however, as energy, both, however, are energy, Although the energies are simultaneously one with and differ from him, the Lord never loses his personal form due to the transformation of his different energies. So you understand this principle that is being made here is that Prabhupada is explaining that they put through the idea of the theory of illusion, but they say everything is illusion. The material world is illusion, the soul is illusion, God is illusion, it's all illusion. The only reality is that you become God. That's the Mayavadi theories. When you realize you're God, then everything is understood as illusion except you. If you actually logically think about this philosophy, it's quite ludicrous and ridiculous. Believe it or not, there are more people who follow Mayavadi and impersonalist philosophy than there are personalism. Although all the history, all the architecture, all the music, all the language is all based on personalism and devotion. Yet everything, the majority, just see the effects Sankaracharya had on India. Really powerful. Of course he was in a mission. His mission was to bring people away from Buddhism and back onto the Vedas by explaining the nature of monism, as the absolute truth is, and monist, a one. And he was commissioned by the Lord to perform this, some people say, disservice, in the sense that he says it in one verse, Mayavadam Chatas Astam. What is that word? Pratichanam Asaram Uchchite Maya Hitam Mayatanitam Devi Brahma To Brahma Murtina, something like that. He says, my dear Devi, he's speaking to his consort, the material energy, Parvati. He said, in this age, I take the form of a Brahman, and I explain the principles of the Vedas in a false way, similar to atheistic Buddhism. He actually explains that. Lord Shiva speaks and tells. So he was out to deceive the Buddhist, and that was the whole idea. But he established a philosophy that became very strong in the world. And today, we find there's still a battle between the personalist and the personalist and the impersonal. Most living entities are impersonal. If you go to India, they have a philosophical understanding of their impersonalism. If you come to America or the Western countries, people are impersonal also. They're very impersonal, but except they don't have any philosophy. Everything they do is impersonal. If you think you're the center, then that's impersonalism. And the whole material cosmic manifestation is based on the understanding that Krishna says, what is that verse? One who sees me in everything, and everything in me, I'm never lost to him, or he's not lost to me. Krishna's in everything. He's within the material energy, he's outside of the material energy, he's within the heart of all living beings, in his form, in his manifestation of the impersonal energy of the Lord. But ultimately, for a devotee, that personal energy becomes personalized by through the process of devotional service. And that's why, in one sense, sometimes the devotees don't make any distinction between the Krishna's energy and Krishna. They treat Krishna's energy as if they were directly dealing with Krishna. And Prabhupada, when he would be walking along sometimes on a morning walk, and he would see lawn sprinklers, and people have these sprinklered lawns and they just keep going, he'd say, what a waste of water. Krishna's energy is being wasted. He feels so, he would be very sad. And sometimes he would see a faucet dripping, he would say, go turn that off. That's Krishna's energy you're wasting. Or somebody left the light on, he would say, shut that light off. You're wasting Krishna's energy. He saw everything in relationship to Krishna, and he wanted everything to be used in the way it was supposed to be used, and never wasting. But you see, the Western society is a waste society. They exploit the earth for paper, for plastic, and for other different kinds of resources. And they just, when they get tired of it, they throw it away. So we see in the Western countries, they have so many landfills that are so full of trash and garbage. Trash is one of the biggest commodities in the Western countries. People have more trash. Sometimes you got 4, 5, 6 garbage cans. Just fill them up. So much junk. And there was a crisis years ago, they were talking about this crisis, that they were trucking garbage from state to state because there were not any authorized landfills that they could actually dump garbage in. It's actually, if you get caught throwing garbage sometimes in the wrong places, you can get fined. It's a big problem, garbage. And this is a waste society. You know, paper plates, they take them, they throw them away. Plastic spoons, cups, what else they have and throw away. You know, cans, everything. Everything is just throw away. Waste society. And that's impersonalism, because it's based on the idea we don't understand what it's here for and how it should be used. So that's a sign of impersonalism. Okay, so these are some principles on the difference between personal and personalism. Therefore, a devotee should be able to treat everything as if it was I don't know how to say it. To treat everything as if everything was the most important thing that you had. Prabhupada was so meticulous about every little thing that everything was done just nicely. And never waste Krishna's energy, never abuse Krishna's energy, always remain simple, neat, clean, everything so nice, so orderly, no excess, like that. Use it all for Krishna. Mm-hmm. And that's actually Krishna consciousness. The tendency is that sometimes we don't see it as either ours or Krishna's. It doesn't belong to anybody. That's our philosophy. It's not mine. It's not Krishna's. So the tendency is that sometimes we misuse or abuse things. But Prabhupada was very, very, very strong on this, because he wanted to teach the conditioned souls that we should try to treat everything as belonging to Krishna. And that is the actual reality. Everything does belong to Krishna. Nothing belongs to us. We get an opportunity as his parts and parcels to use the things of this world for his service. And that is our relationship with Krishna. Anatta sakta visayam yar yatamham upayunjite nirbande Krishna sambande yukta vairagya upajjate. It's explained by Srila Rupa Goswami that things that should be used in the service of the Lord, that is real renunciation. Nothing should be wasted. And that is the whole thing, the whole idea. Always trying to think how we can use anything in Krishna's service. That is the consciousness of a devotee of the Lord. Okay, so these are some principles. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, in Chapter 12, verses 17 through 21. Chapter is entitled Mohini Murti Bewilders Lord Shiva. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Number 21 is on the board. So, we'll do 21 Sanskrit. Slatar Dukulam Kabirim Cha Vichutam Sanayatim Vama Karena Kalguna Vijnatim Anye Karena Kadukam Vimohayantim Jagatma Mayaya Stala Dukalam Kalibin Chavit Vichutam Sanyayatim Vama Karena Vaguna Vinigyadatim Anukare Kandukam bhimo hayatim jagat atma mayaya slatta dukalam karirim chavi vichukyam sanhyayatim vamana karina vauguna vinigatim gyanye karaina kandukam vimohayatim jagat atma mayaya slata dukalam karabrim chavichutam sanhyayatim vamana karena vaguna vinigatim anya karena kandukam vimohayatim jagat atma mayaya. Anyone else? So we'll go back and do verse 17. Sri Suku Vacha Iti Bruvano Bhagavans Tatravanta Radiyata Sarvatas Charams Chakshur Bhava Aste Samoha. Translation. Sri Sukadeva Goswami is continued. After speaking in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, immediately disappeared, and Lord Shiva remained there with Uma, looking for him all around with moving eyes. Tato dadarshau pavine varastriyam vichitra puspa runa palavadume vikridatim kanduka lilayavasad dukula paryastavi nitimbam mekhalam. Translation. Thereafter, in a nice forest nearby, full of trees with reddish pink leaves and varieties of flowers, Lord Shiva saw a beautiful woman playing with a ball. Her hips were covered with a shining sari and ornamented with a belt. Avartanano dvatatana, avartanano dvatatana kampitastana, prakrishya horura bara pade pade. Padyajyamanam iva manyatas jalat pada pavaram nahitim tatastataha. Translation. Because the ball was falling down and bouncing up, as she played with it, her breasts trembled. And because of the weight of those breasts and her heavy flower garlands, her waist appeared to be all but the breaking at every step, as her two soft feet, which were reddish like coral, moved here and there. Dikshu brahma kanduka japaplayar drishyam pradignataranyata lokalochanam svakarna vibrajita kundalaloshat kapola nilalaka manditananam. Translation. The woman's face was decorated by broad, beautiful, restless eyes, which moved as the ball bounced here and there from her hand. The shoe, too, brilliant earrings on her ears decorated her shining cheeks like bluish reflections, and the hair scattered on her face made her even more beautiful to see. Word for word, gently, text 21, stalad, slipping or slackening, dukulam, the sari, kambarincha, on the hair of the head. Vichutam, being slackened and scattered. Snanayatim, trying to bind. Vamakarena, with the left hand. Valguna, very beautifully attractive. Vinigatim, striking. Anyakarena, with the right hand. Kandukam, the ball. Vimohayatim, in this way captivating everyone. Jagat, the whole world. Atmamayaya, by the spiritual potency, the eternal energy. Translation and purport, by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As she played with the ball, the sari covering her body became loose and her hair scattered. She tried to bind her hair with her beautiful left hand. At the same time, she played with the ball by striking it with her right. This was so attractive that the Supreme Lord, by his internal potency, in this way captivated everyone. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 7.14 it is said, Daivi Esha Gunamayi Mama Maya Daratyaya. The external potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely strong. Indeed, everyone is fully captivated by her activities. Lord Shambhu Shiva was not to be captivated by the external potency, but because Lord Vishnu wanted to captivate him also, he exhibited his internal potency to act the way that his external potency acts to captivate ordinary living entities. Lord Vishnu can captivate anyone, even such a strong personality as Lord Shambhu. Omigyan timidandasya genanjana salakaya chaksu unvidandina tasmai shikadvayamaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stathitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swampadantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Parunditya Sri Advaita Gadara Srivasani Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. Try that again. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Interesting story. Very amazing pastime here. The Supreme Lord is now answering the request of his most foremost of all devotees, Lord Shiva, to show him that female form that bewildered the demons. But the Lord is not using exactly that form. He's showing him a form even more powerful, because he knew that form couldn't bewilder Lord Shiva. He's using his special, special powerful form. And what is it? The form of a woman. And here, all the attractive features and all the movements and all the gestures and all the surroundings that would attract a conditioned soul mind to such sights of pleasure is being exhibited by the Lord. And Lord Shiva is there, and he's being captivated. So here Prabhupada says, Daivi Esha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dharatyaya Mam Evayeti Papadyante Maya Itam Dharatite. And that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and that this material energy is daivi. It's my energy. It's divine. And therefore it is very, very powerful. No one can cross over this material energy unless they take full shelter in my lotus feet. So to cross the ocean of material existence, you know, for a person, is like trying to swim across the ocean. Can anyone swim across an ocean? Does anyone know? I think what was the greatest swimmer in the history of swimming was some... It was actually a lady. She swam the English Channel or something. Right? That was considered to be a great feat. The English Channel was from London to where? Ireland or something? Probably. I'm not sure on my geography. But, and that's, compared to an ocean, that's very small. So you can imagine, can anyone swim across an ocean? No. The ocean is so vast, it's so deep, it's so powerful, that it's like unlimited, it's overwhelming. And so, but this material world is like an ocean. And to get across it is the objective of the living entity. But if one has a good boat, and if one has favorable winds and a good captain, then everything is auspicious, then one can be taken across Or, in another analogy, is that the ocean, can, if it shrinks to the size of a puddle, then one can just jump over it. So that is the explanation of the acharyas, that one can never cross this ocean of material existence by one's own endeavors. Maya is too powerful. Impossible. We were explaining the different examples of Maya yesterday, how Krishna was even showing himself how he was bewildered by Maya when the cowherd voice came into the mouth of Agassura. Krishna, for a moment, it was explained by the acharyas that he became bewildered. He was shocked to see that scene and his own friends going to this mouth of this hideous snake. But why did Krishna exhibit that, or why the acharyas speak like that? It's because what the Lord does, he wants to teach an example. His pastimes are also full of examples for the conditioned souls to learn. An example is that Maya is so powerful that no one can cross the ocean of Maya. It's so powerful. One may have all kinds of mental and academic and intelligence, one may have great intelligence, one may have mystic power, one may have so many resources, but it's impossible. No one can overcome. And what is the most formidable form of the illusionary energy that keeps everyone trapped? Kapila Dev, the Supreme Lord himself, explained that. He says, just see Maya in the form of a woman is the most formidable power within this creation. And simply attract conditioned souls to stay in this material world life after life. And there's one verse in Srimad Bhagavatam wherein Kapila Dev speaks like that, explaining that the attraction to the opposite sex can completely destroy one's intelligence, or one cannot understand one's position, one's relationship, or anything. One becomes bewildered by that potency. Very powerful. Very powerful. It's Krishna's power, though. And so this material world is called Maitunya Agra. And Maitunya means sex life, and Agra means shackles. So the conditioned soul in this material world is attracted to so many things, but the foundation for that attraction is to the opposite sex. And that attraction to the opposite sex keeps the conditioned soul life after life in this material world. So therefore, the principle is vairagya, renunciation. And that is, one must give up sense gratification. That is the whole process. And by gradually giving up sense gratification, and of course engaging in the service of the Lord, one actually develops a higher taste, param jishvami vartante. When one gets a higher taste, then they lose the attraction for the lower taste. So here, the Supreme Lord, I mean, he could have, you know, satisfied Lord Shiva in so many ways, but he's performing this activity also to show the conditioned souls just how powerful the material energy is. It's very powerful. Of course, Mohini Murti is not the material energy. It's Krishna in the form of a woman. Because he understood that nothing in this material world could bewilder Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva's Vaishnavanam Yatasabhu. He's the personification of Dhira. He's completely detached from anything in this world. He doesn't even have a house. You know the story? Parvati, his consort, who is the personification of the material energy. You see, Shiva Shakti, Shiva controls Shakti, she is the material energy. So she said to him one day, she said, my dear Mahadev, you are the greatest of all the devas, and so many people worship you. But what do we have? We don't even have a place to live. You simply live under a tree. So how is that any type of respectability? No place to live. Right? You see people living under a tree outside, you think, homeless, right? Give them some food to eat, or give them some coins so he can buy something for himself. Right? In India, you find many people are like that. There's homeless everywhere. So, of course, that's the a little different.
American.
Awesome.
So Shiva, he doesn't even have a house.
So Parvati said, we should have a house. So she said, he wanted to satisfy his wife. He said, all right. So they got a house constructed. This is a nice story. If you listen to this story, you'll understand a little bit about Shiva.
What happened was, Lord Shiva and Parvati, they invited all the great sadhus, headed by Gargarishi. So they came. And after they came, they had this program, and then at the end of the program, it's of course customary to give some remuneration to the holy person, some gift. That is also part of the Vedic culture. So it was time for the gift giving to the holy people. And she was looking around, he had nothing to give. He didn't know what to do. So then he remembered, oh, I have a house. So he gave away the house. So he's back under a tree again. So you can see Lord Shiva is very lost. He has nothing. Of course, nowadays, if you turn open like that, people will think you're some beggar. Someone said to Shiva Prabhupada one time, in India, many of the sages and sadhus, they live under trees, they travel, they have no residence. I see you building so many temples, you have so many nice material facilities. Isn't this going against the principles of spiritual life and renunciation? And Prabhupada's response was, well, in the Western countries, if we do that, if we simply stand under the tree and chant Hare Krishna, nobody would come. He said, we can do that. We have no problem going anywhere and doing anything because we are simply satisfied by chanting the holy names. But who will join us? The Westerners will not be attracted to us. So therefore, we are using everything in Krishna's service to attract the Western minds. We don't need big buildings. We don't need fancy cars, we don't need so many electronic devices. But we're using them because in this age, they're useful in spreading Krishna consciousness. So that is your divine right. But ultimately, if the devotee is happy, what makes the devotee happy? Three things. Chanting the holy names, Krishna Prasad, and some nice devotional association. If we have nice friendship amongst the devotees, we have nice Krishna Prasad. So Shiva, he has nothing. Here, son, back to the point. We're saying that, again, the nature of delusionary action. And this is very instructive. That one should not now become self-assured that you, that Maya, Prabhupada used to say that one thing about you, you devotees in the Western countries, he said, you have one big problem. You don't fear Maya enough. He says, you don't have a healthy fear of Maya. You take Maya for granted. He says, that is one of the problems with you Westerners. And it's the devotee really has no fear. The devotee by nature is abhaya. He's fearless. Why? Because he's taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada's name was Abhaya Charanananda. One who fearlessly takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. So we also take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. But what is the fear that a devotee has? Can anyone tell me what is that fear a devotee has? What is the fear that... Yes. That could be understood in two ways. What do you mean? Powerful. So we do everything. forms his days to Shilapalpa. He's always constantly in that room. Please don't let me fall into one. Please somehow or other always let me remember your own speech. And Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, always remember me. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Now all fear homage to me. Surely you will come to me. I promise you, because you're my new and dear friend. So, a devotee always wants to think of Krishna.
Thank you.
So one thing we should master, trying to become Krishna conscious, and that means constantly absorbing ourselves. And then when Maya comes along, and Maya will always come along, we don't have any attraction for Maya.
Somehow or other, just
going to flow in our spiritual life. It's very hard to make it faster. You want to become a good devotee. One of the services you can take is become a cook or become a pujari. I recommend everyone to be a pujari and a cook. Why? Because you have a schedule you have to meet. You have to be there for the deities. You have to be there for the offerings. You have to be on time and you have to be, ready to go. Of course, if a person is self-motivated, they can push themselves and be responsible and engaged. But generally, the tendency of the conditioned soul is to take it easy. So, one of the services, I guess, rights can sure promote can tell you that you have to get up right. The alarm rings in the morning. You can't say, forget it, Mom. I'm just going back to sleep. And then Balaram will come with his plow and club and drag you out of bed. Why aren't you serving my younger brother? And he beats you with his club. So we have deity worship responsibilities. We become somewhat fixed in Krishna consciousness. But we shouldn't always see that we have to be forced. So a devotee is always thinking, how can I serve Krishna? How can I use this time for serving the Lord? And that way we lose our attraction to Maya, we lose our tendency to eat and sleep and waste time. And these things are just, they just keep us bound up in this consciousness that I am the body. When you were karmis, when you used to just hang out together, you'd be going out on Friday nights. I don't know people in India, but in the Western world, you go out with your friends and you just ride around in your car. You're sitting there together and you say to the other guy, what do you want to do? And he says, I don't know, what do you want to do? And you say, go back and forth, and I don't know, what do you want to do? I don't know, what do you want to do? And so they have to go back and forth sometime, and then you wind up getting intoxicated. And then after you get intoxicated, you say, what do you want to do? And he says, I don't know, what do you want to do? Right? I don't know about being in India, but in the West it's like that. Anybody can verify my statement or my exaggeration. Nobody knows what to do. Everybody's bored to death. And My very body, legs, existence, it's all yours. You are the only one that is worthy of service. And you try to give service to this material world. Nobody appreciates your service. The wife, the husband serves the wife, and the wife says, you're bummed. You still not got it right. You don't know how to treat me, right? You do your best to satisfy me. Why don't you get a job? Why don't you do something useful? Why don't you take me out and buy me a new sari and
jeans?
It's always like that. And the husband is saying to the wife, you don't know what I like. You can't cook right. She's doing her best to cook. So nobody's satisfied. Nobody in the material world is satisfied. Everybody's just looking for satisfaction. The husband can't satisfy the wife. The wife can't satisfy the children. Don't like the family. They just want to get out of there as soon as possible. And the parents, sometimes they give their life to the children. They grow up and the children become teenagers. They say, who needs you? What do you ever do for me? You gave me sense gratification all my life, and now I'm gonna, because from spiritual birth. A woman, when Krishna's not the center, then everything is Shama Amitabha. And since it's so useless, waste of life, you see, nobody's satisfied. Nobody's happy. Therefore, it's important that in all our relationships, whatever they may be, Krishna must be that factor. We must establish everything on the principles of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if we establish things on the principles of material activities, and then our relationships become no better than exploitations. We exploit each other. And that's what material life means, an opportunity to exploit somebody else. There's no love in the material world, as Prabhupada said that. What goes on as love is lust. Lust means I want satisfaction. Love means I want to satisfy you. That's the difference between lust and love. One who is self-interested has no love, and that's called lust. And love is not selfish, love is selfless. So ultimately, in Krishna consciousness, we can serve each other in a selfless way. Why? Because Krishna is the center. We have no relationship with these bodies. What are these bodies? They're just combination of different material elements. What we're interested is in the soul within the body. And that soul is part and parcel of Krishna. The servant of Krishna. So therefore, a devotee has love for everyone. Why? Because he sees Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna. And he gives, he tries to give others Krishna consciousness. He doesn't cater to their material desires, their material wants. He gives them Krishna. And that is, when you give Krishna, you're giving the best thing. If you give somebody else something other than Krishna, you're actually enhancing their bondage in the material world. Just like sometimes people who are intoxicated or addicted to intoxication, they become beggars in order to support their habits, and sometimes they come up to you and they say, "Oh, can you give me some money for a cup of coffee? Or I haven't had any food." And they're so down and out poor. And you're thinking, "Oh, this person is so unfortunate." some money. So they give him some money because he wants to help them. And they take the money and they buy some intoxication and they again increase their addiction and their misery. So you're a well-wisher. You want to help them. But because you don't understand, you're just catering there to their material desires. So you increase their misery. Better to give them some food directly. I've had that many times. People come up to my window of my car and knock on the window, can you give me some money for food? So I carry some prasad with me. So I go, I give them prasad. Sometimes they don't want it, they walk away. Because that's not what they want. In India, what we do, we have a policy in our Chaupati Bombay temple. All the devotees must carry packages of prasadam with them. Because in India, every time you stop at a light, people come up. And to turn the person away is actually an offense. You should not refuse anyone any kind of. If a person asks you for something, you must give them. When you don't want to give them money, because you don't know what to use their money for. So the best thing you can give them is prasad. So we always, the rule is all devotees carry little packages of prasad in the cars. So when people knock on the window, we have some prasad. And most people take. You're happy to get some Krishna prasad. So, in all our relationships, we have Krishna has to be the center. If Krishna's not the center, then that relationship is material. And really, there's no benefit in that relationship at all. Okay. Spoke long enough. Any questions or comments or anything? Yes. Sean? And the explanation is that a devotee satisfied by knowing what we are.